everybody, and welcome. I'm really looking forward to today. I know I'm going to be learning a lot, and people are joining us. I wanted to say something. When I was first thinking about doing this event on cannabis, and I got together with one of the panelists who you'll meet, Robert Forte. He's my dear friend, and we were talking about this event, and he was sharing with me something about this social experiment that was really interesting that happened in the 1950s by a guy named Solomon Ash. And the intent of the study was to look at conformity that results from brute pressure. And in our conversation, we talked about it in terms of something that Robert coined the phrase, the psychology of non-perception, which I love that phrase. And the point of it is where we deny our own reality, even when there's evidence to support it, in order to share the dominant reality of the group that we're in. So the experiment, which happened at Swarthmore College, has the host of the experiment go up and ask some random student if they're willing to participate in a study. And once agreed, the solicitor brings the unsuspecting student into a room where there are eight or more individuals who appear to be fellow participants in the experiment. They sit down in front of a screen where there's one line on the left and three lines on the other side to the right. So of those three lines, there's one that's always exactly the same as the one on the left. Goa, you could bring up the image if you would. So the eight or more people, they're all lined up in front of the screen, and they're not in the same role as the student. They're in on what's happening. So with the unsuspecting student always answering last, the host asks each person to identify which line on the right is the match for the line on the left. Sometimes the participants say the correct line, but sometimes they unanimously identify an incorrect answer. They agree among themselves on which line to choose. So what happens is that overall, 75% of the innocent participants gave at least one incorrect answer. And in those cases, the incorrect answer always matched what the groups said. So, you know, there it was. The reality of social pressure to conform was demonstrated with this experiment. But what Robert and I were talking about, and what's really most interesting to me, is that only 5% of the participants were always swayed by the crowd. 25% of the sample consistently defied majority opinion, with the rest conforming only on some of the trials. So what is it about the 25% who never relinquished their own truth that we can understand and nurture in ourselves and others? And how do we foster the independent thinking and courage needed to stand up for what we see and know to be true? The evidence is absolutely clear to anyone willing to look that the pharmaceutical industry has taken over healthcare and turned it into sickness management. There's a pharmaceutical stranglehold on rightful access to an array of effective remedies for cancer and other illnesses, and sweeping disinformation about everything from the nature of disease to its cure and the role of our own immunity in achieving great health. So many of us find ourselves in the same role as that unsuspecting student, you know, surrounded by people who deny our common sense and our evidence-based reality. And it makes it all the more important for those of us who are unwilling to deny our knowing to speak up and validate each other's questions and insights. So I'm really excited for this event because today's guests are people who I admire for their contribution to this awakening process. They acknowledge that the dominant paradigm is medicine is based on manipulated research, suppressed alternatives, and outright deception. And they give us the tools and insights needed to obsolete the pharmaceuticals, knowledge and access to alternative healing modalities that ignite and nurture our own immune systems. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about who's on with us, and then we'll dive in. Dr. William Courtney has an extensive medical background and education. And he and his wife, Kristen, are experts in the world of juicing cannabis and are extremely knowledgeable about its dietary and medicinal potential, as well as about how a lot of the legislation impacts our freedom to cultivate and access cannabis. And he'll be talking with us about that. He and his wife are co-founders of Cannabis International. Valerie Corral is the founder of WAM, Women and Men's Alliance for Medical Marijuana. Since 1993, it's the first openly operating cannabis collective, providing comprehensive, compassionate care to patients. She has personally helped a very close friend of mine to stay alive. I am deeply personally grateful. And she's one of the true leaders in the field of challenging laws and is relentless in her commitment to keeping cannabis financially and practically available to patients and out of the hands of Monsanto and the pharmaceuticals. Robert Forte, my dear friend for over 35 years, he is a real scholar and bold pioneer in the world of entheogens. I didn't know what entheogens were before, Robert. It's a chemical substance used in religious, shamanic, or spiritual context. He has amazing stories and experiences, as you can imagine. He wrote a great book called Entheogens and the Future of Religion, and I highly encourage you to check it out. We're going to put a link to that in the chat. For the last 6 years, he's focused on cannabis as a locally grown therapeutic sacrament. And he's also done some really important sleuthing to help us understand the history of the laws regulating cannabis and can help us navigate the misleading petitions circulating today. Each of the guests will speak for 15 minutes to give a super abbreviated glimpse into their vast knowledge. And then we're going to open it up for interaction so you can ask any and all of them questions and share your own experiences. One person, Nate, who's on the line, has a wonderful story about his 7-year-old son, Hayden, who's now healed from cancer. And Nate, we're glad to have you on and look forward to your story and others.
And before we dive in, I just want to also welcome you all and thank you sincerely for spending part of your weekend with us. I feel really privileged to have these three courageous and committed experts with us today to share what I know is going to be really useful information and interaction. Kimberly is considerably more knowledgeable in this topic than I am, so she'll be taking the lead today, and I will be just listening and learning and participating along with the rest of you. So I hope you enjoy the day.
So just to be clear about how it works, if you speak, you're being recorded. So that's your agreement right there. And if you would use the chat for comments and to share resources with each other, and then the Q&A for getting questions to us and the panelists. If you have a technical issue, please write to events@thrivemovement.com, and Mitch is on hand to handle any tech issues. And please let him know when your tech issue is resolved so that he gets a little sense of satisfaction for fielding all of that, although hopefully there won't be many today. And when you're entering a comment or a resource in chat, be sure to put it, sending it to all participants so everybody get it. And people with questions today won't be on video as normally you are because we have too many panelists to make that work smoothly. We're also not in our usual places. You know, we're on a trip. We're actually on a Thrive Connect trip, checking out amazing innovations in the world of new energy and healing. So we're not in our usual place, and it just adds extra challenges. So any of you who don't like to be on camera, you can relax. And if you were hoping to be, I apologize for the technical limitations today, but I assure you it will be worth it. So I'd like to welcome Robert to begin, and then we'll go to Dr. Courtney and then Val and on to open it up. Thanks so much, everyone, for joining.
Well, thank you. I guess it's my turn now. Are you hearing me?
Yes, we are.
Everybody's hearing me? Okay. So I've never done one of these video lectures or conferences before, new experience. Nice to see you guys. Foster, hello.
Hi, Robert.
Hi. So I thought I would just cover the three basic points here. What's going on, how we got here, and how can we get out of this situation that we're in? I want to thank you for giving me the chance to say a few things. I really appreciate this. This is a really exciting time. We are seeing finally a much needed transformation of our cannabis policies, both locally, statewide, and nationally. Locally, it's been an especially exciting time. You know, we've had Santa Cruz is in many ways the birthplace of the national medical marijuana movement. We're going to hear more about that from Valerie. We've developed a very, very progressive and almost libertarian policy here where local growers can cultivate cannabis. That was met by a very repressive reaction by a politically conservative group this year, which kind of behind the scenes suddenly announced that our progressive policies were going to be drastically curtailed. Well, what that did was spark a popular movement in Santa Cruz where a group of people got together and in just a couple of weeks raised $80,000 and produced 11,000 signatures, like a political, just an amazing political cooperation, and turned back this repressive measure by our county board of supervisors. Meanwhile, in Sacramento, there had been meetings going on, and Governor Brown, just a few months ago, signed into law, I think it's AB 266, which is also curtails our local policy. And so I'm just saying this because it's a very shifting area where there's a lot going on, which presents a really terrific opportunity for those of us interested in this to kind of, you know, take control, be inspired by our local politics and see what we can do. There is now a multi-billion dollar national medical marijuana industry. And there's a lot of people who are scrambling to control that significant wealth. And so the question that's before us is, who is going to control this wealth? Is this going to be something that is going to be, you know, distributed amongst the people, encouraging a lot of individual products and innovative research, or is it going to be centralized and controlled by people more affiliated with the government? And so that's kind of, you know, what's going on right now. We're in a very peculiar situation. We have been in a very peculiar situation for the last last century, but we have cannabis, which is really one of the first, oldest, continuously used plants by human beings. It was first domesticated before human history really began. It has a continuous use of 10,000 years of medical, recreational, spiritual, enhancing creativity. There's a whole nother part of this that maybe we'll get into another time. I think Foster said he was interested in this, in hemp, industrial hemp. That's a whole nother section. This is a plant that produces fibers that are used for textiles, for building, for fuel. You can power an industrial civilization with the right use of this plant. So cannabis is one of the oldest, most versatile, safest, most beneficial plants in the history of civilization. And since the 1960s in the United States, the land of the free, over a million people have been incarcerated for using this plant, for growing it, for transporting it, for selling it. And it's an abomination. And so, you know, how did we get here? Well, we got here a combination of greed and racism. So here's a plant that had been used safely in medical practice since the beginning of time. About the beginning of the last century, used more by minorities in this country, by Hispanics and by Blacks, it began to attract a kind of racist reaction from political groups. And soon there was a sprinkling of these anti-cannabis laws throughout the United States. Then in the middle, around the 30s, we have corporate greed really setting in, and we have DuPont comes up with nylon, which is going to compete with hemp for many of the textile uses in rope and fiber. And so DuPont, kind of behind the scenes, manages to convince his friends in the government, prominently Andrew Mellon, and they push through the Marijuana Tax Act of 1937. This is, again, something that's been kind of, there were many sensationalistic reports of white girls being raped or brutalized by black men using hemp. And there was a vicious campaign to slander this plant and to turn public opinion against it. And they did successfully pass this Marijuana Tax Act, which made it prohibitively expensive for hemp to be grown by U.S. agriculture. And this is a plant that was a mainstay of American agriculture, and it suddenly just turned this corner into this demon weed. We've all seen these, reefer madness and these hysterical, almost cartoonish films, but they were taken seriously by people back in the 30s, 40s. So now we're getting up into the 40s and 50s, and of course the Marijuana Tax Act doesn't keep the counterculture from using hemp. In fact, it probably inspires them to a certain extent, and hemp is used more and more by to inspire creativity amongst the jazz community, again, racial minorities in the cities, and this use kind of grows until it becomes used by a psychological researcher from the Harvard faculty, Timothy Leary, who begins a campaign in the early 1960s to popularize cannabis and other mind-expanding drugs as a way to inspire a counterculture that would become a significant rebuke to the dominant culture, the military, industrial, corporate, rapacious corporate capitalism that we're all dealing with now. So Tim was, I don't know who we're talking to, the ages. I talk to a lot of young people these days, and I mentioned Timothy Leary, and they think he was a pitcher on the Los Angeles Dodgers, there was a Timothy Leary pitcher on the Los Angeles Dodgers. But Tim was a courageous and brilliant, and in spite of his foibles, began to inspire a significant anti-war, pro-nature, humanistic movement in the 1960s from his perch at Harvard University, which he quit in 1963. He wasn't actually fired, he actually quit, and began to lead what became this international anti-war movement until he was busted for... Actually, his daughter was busted. His teenage daughter had about an ounce of weed in her panties when they were traveling back from Mexico. And Tim took responsibility for the grasp and was sentenced to 30 years in prison by a Texas court for a little bit of, he says, low-grade weed. But this changed the course of history in a way, and not for the better at first, because... sentenced to 30 years, he appealed the sentence three times. Finally, the Supreme Court he wins at the Supreme Court. They repeal the sentence. They agree that the laws against marijuana are unconstitutional. And so for a brief period in the late 1960s, there were no federal laws covering marijuana. Tim announces candidacy for governor, gets busted again. Nixon is livid that Leary has beat him in court. And Nixon begins to convene a commission to come up with an anti-marijuana policy that is going to be a direct response to this anti-war movement. We can listen to or read transcripts of Nixon's drunken rants in the basement of the White House and in the Oval Office feeling betrayed by these commissions. Why are all these psychiatrists Jewish, he says to Bob Haldeman. They're intent on bringing down civilization like the Romans. We need a marijuana policy that'll tear the ass out of them. And so the commissions came back to the president and said, but Mr. President, we can't find anything wrong with this. It's safe. It's beneficial. It should not be criminalized. We should encourage research. Nixon gets even more furious, calls Leary the most dangerous man in the world, and in the late 1960s is able to whip Congress into a frenzy on this law and order platform and gives us the 1970s Controlled Substance Act, which lists cannabis and the other safe botanical entheogens as drugs which have no medical use and a high potential for abuse, even though it is well known historically and scientifically that the opposite is true. But we are still living under the rules imposed on us by Nixon's Congress in 1970. That's the current situation. Now, what do we do now? Well, there are so many things going on in the world of drug policy. And just to not let this get muddied, I know Val's going to talk a little bit, but right now in California, there are going to be at least two initiatives coming to the ballot in 2016. One of them, is called the California Cannabis Hemp Initiative of 2016. This was actually written in 1990 by Jack Herer, who is a prominent hemp advocate, hemp and cannabis advocate, sort of a gruff demeanor. He really speaks to the underground cannabis community, hard-hitting facts, author of a book called The Emperor Wears No Clothes. And he's sparked a following, and they've been tenaciously trying to get this initiative on the ballot, as is a sort of typical problem with cannabis activists. Sometimes we're not always that organized. This is not very well funded, but it is to the point. It is basically legalizes the personal use of cannabis, legalizes up to 12 pounds of cannabis, permits people to grow 99 plants. It releases all of the cannabis nonviolent offenders who are in prison in California jails, releases them. It also totally legalizes the growing of industrial hemp. It fully supports Proposition 215, which was the California Medical Marijuana Initiative that was passed in 1996. So contrast to Jack Herer's cannabis initiative is one that's recently come up just last week or 2 weeks ago, that is sponsored by the tech mogul Sean Parker. This is a 60-something page document with a lot of fine print. It's called the Control, Tax, and Regulate Cannabis Initiative. And it pretends to be a legalization initiative, but it's a thinly veiled money grab to control cannabis and tax it heavily, prevent individuals from cultivating reasonable amounts for their own use. And it's just an interesting dichotomy that we voters are going to have a chance to look at over the next few months. So maybe I've said enough to spark some of our conversations.
That's fabulous. Thank you so much. I really appreciate it. I know when I looked up the latest legislation coming down from Sean Parker and saw that it was supported by the Nature Conservancy, and I know that the head of the Nature Conservancy is the former managing director of Goldman Sachs, I knew that we were in trouble. And, you know, unfortunately, I think he's going to be marketed as a cool, hip, successful billionaire guy here to put his money to the good cause. And, you know, when you're coming out of the grocery store, you're going to be hit with, hey, sign this great petition to legalize marijuana. So it's our job, those of us who are getting educated, to really help educate others about reading the fine print and taking the second step here in analyzing these things. Did you want to comment on that, Robert?
I'm hopeful. Yeah, just for a second. I'm hopeful because, you know, back in 2010, we had in California Proposition 19, which was called a legalization of marijuana initiative, which actually would have made marijuana more restricted than it was when they began the campaign for it. And it was defeated in California. Just a few weeks ago, Ohio ran another thinly veiled calling it legalization, but it was just corporate control. And it was easily defeated in Ohio. So I'm hopeful that there was some brilliance behind Leary's popularizing these drugs, that the drugs actually do, in many cases, inspire this kind of independent thinking. You mentioned Solomon Ash at the beginning, you know, another study to see if those who didn't conform, what their pharmacological backgrounds were. But we could go on all day.
Great. Thank you so much. Love this. All right.
Thank you, Robert. That's great.
Yeah, really, really helpful. And thank you for keeping it succinct so we get a chance for Q&A. Okay, Dr. Courtney, I'd love to hear from you. Can we bring you up?
Yes.
Great. Thank you.
So my interest initially was a dyed-in-the-wool Western physician refused to approve of cannabis for a fellow that I trained with because I just couldn't understand how you could exceed the potency of painkillers and anti-inflammatories and steroids. But that refusal led to my beginning to do research. And within a year, Todd McRia asked if I would kind of represent the California physicians up in Canada at Banff on a three-day seminar on the second cannabinoid binding receptor. At that point, I was amazed that you could spend 3 days discussing the CB2 receptor, but quickly became immersed. And could I go to sharing slides at this point?
Yes. Hold on 1 second. Okay, go right ahead.
Okay, we should be pulling that up. And in particular, we've known that Hippocrates was well known for stating, let your food be your medicine. And in the case of cannabis, No clearer truth has ever been spoken. When I began, there were 21 carbon molecules called cannabinoids. Most recent count, we're up to 150, and I'm certain that we've not even inventoried the contents of that class of molecules. We also know there's 130 terpenes, and we know that there's a synergistic relationship between the terpenes and the cannabinoids, meaning when you eat the raw plant, you get the ratios, you get the classes of molecules that are the result of 34 million years of what I believe is collateral evolution. And the plant itself really only captured a cannabinoid system that dates back 600-800 million years ago before life forms left the ocean. This cannabinoid, this 20 carbon regulatory system, was in place. So for 500 million years, this cellular and intracellular regulatory system was in place until this plant appeared to consolidate the molecules involved in that. And interestingly, cannabis, in its provision of 150 of these molecules, supports the weakest link in our endogenous cannabinoid system, which is the 20 carbon molecules we produce. So as a food, its clear forte is regulating the intracellular environment, a system called intracrine. Most of us are familiar with the endocrine system, regulates the whole body through circulating messenger molecules in the blood system. Paracrine regulates a cluster of cells, and then autocrine regulates across the plasma membrane. Well, intracrine is the awareness that that a lot of the regulation really occurs, the most critical occurs within the cell. And interesting slide and an interesting presentation is about the mitochondria. We are now labeling receptors by the organelle inside of the cell. So there's MTCD1, which are mitochondrial CB1 receptors. We're also finding CB2, GPR55, installed in the membrane around the mitochondria, as well as around the nucleus. Every cell has a synthetic pathway. It brings in raw materials, makes a product, and excretes it. So one cell makes adrenaline, one makes gastric acid, another one makes serotonin, dopamine, acetylcholine. Some remodel bones, some capture photons, some fire neurons. But whatever the cell is doing, it requires the direction of the nucleus, energy from the mitochondria, and some work product. And it looks like the endogenous cannabinoid system is there at the cellular level, regulating cell health. We know that disease arises at that cellular level. So when you maintain cell health, you go a long ways towards preventing disease. And that really is the major conflict that we're seeing socially at this point. And we've known this for some time. In 1975, in the Washington Post, it stated that if you had a mouse that had tumor cells injected into the mouse and developed a lot of metastatic disease, given cannabinoids, those tumors would shrink. Well, if there is a benign substance that has essentially a zero side effect profile that can shrink tumors, it would seem like that would be embraced and widely developed and included in the treatment of cancers. But since 1975, it still is not really involved. For a short 72-hour period, on the National Cancer Institute site, it listed cannabinoids as therapeutic, but within 3 days, that reference was taken down. And so we still remain in a state of just morbid denial and an attempt to control the benefits. But if we look at this pie chart, and this is very old, but it's still one of the best graphics out there, we see that CBD, which now is under license by the Department of Health and Human Services for pharmaceutical development, exclusive development, we see that CBD can reduce anxiety. It's an antipsychotic. One of the first investigative new drug uses was as an antipsychotic in Parkinson's. It's an anti-epileptic. There's been a lot of press about that. And one of my patients is a fellow who really did the heavy lifting to move us into the use of CBD for the control of the channelopathies like Dravet's. Neuroprotective, the federal patent identifies cannabinoids as neuroprotective as well as antioxidants. Vasorelaxant, antispasmodic, whether it's muscle spasms, uterine spasms, or bronchiolar spasms with asthma. Wonderfully effective. Anti-ischemic, reduces heart attack by 66%. Anti-proliferative, benign growths, anti-cancer, malignant growths, anti-emetic, one of the allowed recommended uses at the National Cancer Institute site. Hugely antibacterial, and curiously, it's strongly antibacterial against the intracellular pathogens because the body uses superoxides to destroy the tissue to get at the intracellular pathogen. And so all of my patients have signed a release stating that if you develop Leishmania or one of the intracellular diseases, get it treated aggressively because cannabis could compromise that. Well, it turned out El Soli identified 10 new cannabinoids, many of which had potent antibacterial activity, but not just in general, that there was a lot of activity against the intracellular pathogen. So here's a plant that not only provides incredibly potent antioxidant, but it provides you with bacterial support in the event that antioxidant would have a side effect. And so a very incredibly complex plant that supports cell health. And like I said, this is a very old chart because it's pretty clear that disease arises at the cellular level. When you support cell health, you treat disease at the cellular level. It never becomes preclinical or subclinical, and certainly never clinical. And so, you know, one of its biggest problems is that it prevents disease. And if you're a $2.8 trillion industry who likes to treat disease, its prevention really could become problematic. And thus, you know, the current effort to restrict raw cannabis. Obama has come out against raw cannabis. The National Drug Court has come out against raw cannabis. And it's really hard to imagine what type of effect would lead you to say that. Classically, the pharmaceutical industry is interested in dissembling the plant, like the eight blind individuals trying to describe an elephant. They each got a hold of a piece of this plant, but this plant is not just THC, it's not just CBD, it's not just CBD acid or THC variant or CBC or acid or variants. There's 150 of these molecules that synergize with the 130 terpenes to really provide an amazing benefit, but the pharmaceutical industry wants to reduce it to a single molecule, and we're left trying to figure this out. Another very interesting aspect of current research is repurposing allows you to take a drug that's been approved, find a new use, and now with the Trans-Pacific Pact, all you got to do is change the schedule and you extend another 20 years of patented protection. And with the TPP, essentially medicines will become unaffordable to any but the most wealthy. But that's an aside. In terms of repurposing, tamoxifen, a well-known medicine that is effective in breast cancers of certain types, they found out that it is the first known allosteric modulator positive of the second cannabinoid binding receptor. Now, that's a mouthful, but what it says is that I believe the efficacy of medicines are going to be shown and rewritten in terms of the mechanism of action as to how they interact with this intracellular regulatory system. And tamoxifen, they were trying to repurpose it, that because if you repurpose it, you can save $1 billion in terms of startup costs. You just take an approved drug, apply it to a new use, get another patent, go another 20 years, make a bunch of money. And curiously, they stumbled on the fact that probably the serious mechanism of action of tamoxifen is at its ability to complement the second cannabinoid binding receptor. So I believe that as the years roll forward, we're going to see that most clinically effective medications have a current theory of how they operate, but are quite likely to be, our understanding is going to be enhanced when we actually look at their interaction with this cannabinoid system. And in terms of that, kind of going back to what I believe is the most important level of action is this intracellular environment where you've got the nucleus, you've got the endoplasmic reticulum that constructs a product, it's packaged and then excreted, you've got the mitochondria, and we have this is the site of these cannabinoid receptors, which essentially are found throughout the entire cell, taking us back to this idea that the cannabinoid receptors, whether it's a nuclear, a mitochondrial, an endosome, lysosome, it just shows the depth of the integration of this plant. And I believe that if we would take a look at the relationship between this plant as food in the human body, we would go a long ways to understanding the depth of the genetic biome of the planet and the interrelatedness, and the fact that cannabis as food really is it's just such a stunning way to use the plant. And at this point, animals are quite selective in how they select the plant, and that's where my current research is looking at. We're trying to determine if you put 10 genetics in the woods, a deer will walk by 8 of them and will eat a particular genetic strain, and they will come from every direction and select that particular strain. So we're trying to understand how other animals dose, what their daily dietary use is, what their genetic preference is. And I think that is going to take us to a very exciting product that, you know, you can get in Washington, D.C. It is a cold processed juice, which includes raw cannabis in a non-psychoactive format. And it's that lack of psychoactivity that the federal government's patent turns on, in the sense that the psychoactivity limits your use of the plant. In a non-psychoactive format, your dose can go to considerably higher levels in terms of use as an antioxidant without the problems of maybe being unable to operate vehicles and work through the day. So I think I'm beginning to run out of my introductory time. But I would like to say that cannabisinternational.org is a website that we've been working on for years, and we are currently looking at trying to find a country on this planet where we can grow cannabis as food so it can be provided very affordably and develop an advanced alternatives end-stage cancer treatment and autoimmune disorder clinic. It also would be an educational facility where people could come in to study microgreens, cannabis sprouts, as well as whole leaf uses of the plant. I look forward to any questions in the area of dietary cannabis, its essential role, not only for humans, but for pretty much every animal on the planet, and using this as a springboard to understand collateral evolution as a way of appreciating indigeneity and our relatedness to this planet, and the fact that we are all very indigenous to this plant, both this plant and this planet. And I think a lot of our social movement forward will come from a refined understanding of that.
So helpful. Thank you so much. I knew I would learn a lot on this in this event, and I really will help to put the word out too in terms of finding the land for this, because it's something that needs to happen and there are people who want it to happen. So we'll do what we can to make that connection and everybody here put the word out, because it's keeping this affordable is going to be one of the main tasks of the day.
Essential.
Yeah, thank you so much. I forgot that we have a poll asking our viewers some stuff, but let's go ahead and Val, have you come on also. I really appreciate everybody keeping it succinct, because it allows us to do the interaction, which is something that I really value here.
Thank you, Dr. Courtney. That blew my mind at a whole new level in terms of valuable science-based information about this topic. Thank you so much.
Yeah, so useful.
Pleasure is mine.
Yeah. So Val, come on up and tell us about WAM and you for a few minutes, and then we'll...
Okay, can you hear me?
Going?
I am?
Yes.
All right, great.
Yes.
So thank you for this time. It's been very interesting. And thank you, Robert and Dr. Courtney. I work on with patients, and my work came out of my own illness about 40 years ago, a little more. I suffered a brain trauma in an auto accident, a very freaky accident in the desert with an airplane. And one of those things that changes your life and leads you to a new way of interacting in the world. So I suffered a brain trauma and had grand mal seizures. And my husband at the time read in a medical journal, and probably it was 1974, I think, about laboratory-induced seizures in mice being treated successfully with cannabis and with cannabis extracts. And so we began to grow our own medicine and begin to grow our own foods and move quite remotely. And using cannabis was about 3.5 weeks of use that when I first noticed a difference in sometimes as many as 5 gram mals a day that I was having, often hospitalized. But they began to deter the seizures in a really interesting way. I not only felt less under the weather or the plethora of medicines that I was taking, 5 to 6 pharmaceutical drugs, but I began to experience myself in a different way. And I think that one of the most impactful aspects that I experienced was a shift in consciousness, in a way of looking, not identifying as my illness, but as a product of a circumstance that I was in. These were symptoms, not really the definition of myself, of who I am. So that awakening began as well as coupled with the medicinal value of cannabis. But that awakening helped me to find the balance and the courage to approach my illness in a different way and not be my illness, but deal with the symptoms. So I think that that's a really fundamental marriage with this plant that can and does occur. And we often think of ourselves as being treated by medicines. For instance, doctors often practice medicine, but many do not practice healing. And there's a fundamental difference in the approach that we take as human beings when we deal with our own healing. So the way we look at cannabis use for all of our members is in the approach of healing, not just with cannabis, but with everything in our lives. So that led us to a long history of cultivation, and we were arrested, we had interactions with law enforcement, but we were not arrested until 1992. And zero tolerance was very big and not zero at all. But the impact was quite remarkable. We had a first arrest. We in Santa Cruz had the first, it was actually the second law on the books to make cannabis medical marijuana, the lowest priority by sheriffs and prosecutors in our community. And that passed, and we got to sort of carry the torch for that. I thought that meant we could grow cannabis and provide it not only for ourselves, but for our friends. And we were rearrested again in 1993. At that time, our district attorney told the sheriff that he was not going to prosecute us and to cease from arrest. He didn't do so, but we continued to grow. And we were not deterred by these threats because really it's already a movement. By the 90s, it was a very strong and powerful movement. Medical cannabis was something that people spoke of, if not in massive numbers, at least were open to the idea. And legalization at the time was still recreational or adult use legalization was still too new for people to sink our teeth into, at least as a Californians as a whole. But medical, when we speak about suffering, I think that we cross the boundaries, the personal boundaries that we may have regarding drug use or plant use. And we can find in ourselves a kind of empathy to desire to end suffering in other people, especially if it affects us personally. That changes the whole scope. So we continued to do our work. We were, by 1993, had already, before our second arrest, had already begun an outreach program, simply answering questions of our patients in our own community. And we began WAM in the early spring of 1993, growing cannabis. We had some stashed and shared it with people that we, it was mostly, actually the first three members were cancer patients. Then it opened up to AIDS patients. HIV AIDS patients in our community. And we began with a handful of people, the back of my car, a basket, a little Red Riding Hood kind of approach and delivery to homes. I wanted to collect data from people because people wanted to give something. And data is really a great way to provide both a service from and for others. So we began collecting data. I have thousands and thousands of instruments that have collected over the 23 years that we've been doing this work publicly. And mind you, juicing is a part of what we've done. And because we really throw everything, we companion garden and we throw everything in, all kinds of herbs and Chinese herbs and foods. And it's a really wonderful way to engage in, when we think of whole plant, we think of it in its multitude the multitude of properties that it has, but the multitude of ways of using it. So whether it's topical or ingesting raw or cooked, it can be a tremendous asset because we have evolved with all of nature. As we have in the last 300 years, well, thousands of years with the concept of dominion over nature and a separation from it. We have moved further and further away from the kind of intuitive nature that we have that also plants, and we've begun talking about the consciousness contained in plants, right? This is something that's not dramatically cutting edge. It's been around for about 100 years, speaking to the wisdom of plants or the nature of plants. And when we speak, I should say the consciousness of plants, the wisdom of plants dates back to indigenous peoples and their experiences with plants, where plants have provided for human beings as well as other animals a kind of deep interaction and inter-awareness by taking the plants, ingesting plants. We've opened up as entheogens, and you began to speak about entheogens in the beginning of this conversation, and one can use cannabis in that manner as well, along with other psychedelics or entheogens. So what we ask of our members is something rather rather profound, because it's not our experience or our capability to heal anyone. We don't have anything in a bottle that's going to cure, because there is no panacea that anyone can take anywhere in the world and find an exact set of results. Our bodies do not work that way. We are our own best healers. Given the opportunities and given the access to specific types of medicines and specific ways of thinking about them, we can open up our interaction and intercommunication with our systems. Sort of the way I look at it is with mycorrhizome in the forest is the means of communication. These underneath the duff of when you look under the forest, if you're out taking a walk and you're looking at mushroom hunting, say. But if you lift the duff, if you lift the ground cover, you will see a net, the web of all underground things, connecting plants and trees. And with that is a kind it's the transport of wisdom or knowledge that happens, where plants know where to be. We are all of nature mimics, and our bodies mimic that same kind of opportunity. We have that same kind of opportunity between our systems to communicate. As we shut down, it appears as we shut down, our systems become weakened. The endogenous cannabinoid system is remarkable because contained CB1 receptors are in our immune system. Our systems can be enlivened and enriched by the use of cannabis, and we often using it in its many forms. But we find that juicing during the times that we can provide juicing for a great number of patients, we find that many people are not as interested in this piece of it. Maybe it's the work of juicing themselves. So if they could buy something, these cold pressed juices that we just happened to see in the last slide one of the last slides of Dr. Courtney's presentation. This means by which to provide it makes it simpler for people. So we've created different medicines for patients to take, and we follow different avenues. So we have we call them Milagro oils. It was named by one of our patients, although I think he took 3 drops is all he ingested. But he said that it was the Milagro oil that brought his family together at his bedside before he was dying, and that he was very moved and deeply transported into a way to share with his family that opened not only him up to his own dying process, because he was ready, but his family as well. So 3 drops can go a long way. And healing, we look at healing as being something that occurs right up to the moment of death, maybe after. I don't know anything about after death. So what we do with our members, we have an intake process. They bring to us a medical summary, some medical records that we can review. And when it's possible to speak with a physician, we do so. That is, there's a difficulty, of course, with the law. And in protecting physicians, one always wants to take the extra precautionary methods we need our good doctors safe. And so what we do here in utilizing the information that we gather from patients is create a protocol. Now, these protocols shift depending on the individual, but each protocol is individualized and personalized, which is a future probably of all medicine. Takes about an hour intake with each patient, one to listen, because there's the greatest knowledge that one can have provided for them is through listening to the individual who holds the wisdom. And each person, again, is their own best healer. And so when patients enter, they aren't necessarily as confident with a medicine that might get them too high, but we create these avenues with taking either high CBD, CBDA, THCA, THCV, CBC, these different aspects, and do it, provide it in an oil form so that patients can take a greater or lesser quantity. And each patient enters into this process with timing and the trust of self-application. It's an empowering place to be, and for healing, in the healing process, one must be empowered. It's each of us as becoming the master, but on the way to becoming the master, or to being the master, we have the becoming, which is a huge learning curve. Many patients have a greater understanding, and some a lesser understanding. So we find different applications, including rectal application. The suppositories can cut some of the high from, not all of it, but can cut some of the high from ingesting quantities of THC. One of the really remarkable things that we found is there is no single avenue. It does not mean that if an individual has adenocarcinoma, non-small cell lung cancer, for instance, that, and two patients have it. One chooses a high THC ratio and the other chooses a high CBD ratio. The outcome of no evidence of disease, which is what one wants to achieve, can be the same. Patients utilizing these cannabis medicines as an adjunct with chemotherapies or surgeries or radiation has also been successful. Using them without any Western applications has also been successful. So you can see the great range for healing as is reflected in the great possibilities of each individual. What we hope to do here is not just provide medicine, but provide an avenue of a deeper connection to our own potential for healing and healing right up to the moment of death. WAM also embodies an end of life. We have a death and dying program. Raja Kudo, the Design for Dying, is a nonprofit, a separate nonprofit. We're not it's not hugely funded. It's primarily to assist patients at the end of their lives with whatever their needs might be, including burial, because an indigent patient their ashes are held by the state. Interesting point. So the family cannot recover the ashes unless they are paid for. So, you know, even after death, there's still more work to do, but thankfully not for the patient. So I think
so much. Yeah. It's wonderful. The full extent of and thoughtfulness of what it is that you've created and offered to people, Valerie, I really appreciate it. And I've seen it in action, seeing these particular personalized protocols be created and administered with such care and follow through. And I think it speaks to the consciousness shift that goes hand in hand with this whole, you know, new way of relating, like you were talking about, Dr. Courtney, too, you know, where it shifts the whole paradigm of healing shifts when we have this kind of relationship with the plant and then with each other around it. So I'm really grateful to be in the same community as Wham, and grateful for your courage in starting it in your little Red Riding Hood basket and evolving it into a place now that where people can come and that really serves as a model for the rest of the world.
Yeah, Valerie's really and her team are some of the real heroes of our particular community, and it just could not be captured in words or data how much suffering they have helped to relieve and how much freedom they're bringing to our community as a model, hopefully, for communities all over the world. So thank you, Val.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
I think it would be good to do a poll with our audience here that we created, just to kind of get a feel for who's on board. And then I have questions, and I also want to bring up Nate to after that also to describe his experience and really the things that I know I want to cover more and dive into are specific healing experiences and is it better for some things than others, and also to look at, I know Sean Parker approached you, Valerie, on the to deal with patient care and make it have a semblance of really caring for the patient and all of this. And I think it's really important to unpack how this stuff is happening, because it's so, I share your optimism, Robert. I think people can wake up to this and see what's really going on, and we can, everybody here can help do that. But I just think it's important to understand how it happens. And with the TTP, really getting that piece to Dr. Courtney is really interesting. So, Goa, can you bring up a poll? And thank you again to everybody. And so you can answer as many as is appropriate here for you. But this is it. And I think it's still the case that when you're calling in on mobile or a pad, it won't work for us to get your answer this way. But WebEx is working on that. All right. I know people who have used medical cannabis in the treatment of pain and nausea control, reduction of cancerous tumors, seizures, glaucoma, autism, sleep disorders and insomnia, depression, migraines, anxiety, multiple sclerosis, muscle spasms, Crohn's disease, appetite stimulant, other, or I don't know anyone who has used cannabis medicinally. Just putting together this list really reminded me of how many things this plant has been used for. And oh, look at this. I think it's because we have a lot of mobile people on board, so we can't get all of them. But I see that there's some representative from everybody here. Well, it's fabulous. I really want to hear people's experiences and have you take advantage of these people here with us to ask the questions. All right, so I'm going to bring up some folks to interact. And Nate, I would love to begin with you because I had a chance to talk to you before this call and was so touched by what's happened with your son, Hayden. I think it would be a nice thing for other people to hear about. And again, if you can be succinct so there's lots of time for other people, that would be helpful. Thank you.
So Nate, go ahead. And if you want to click on the, there you go.
Am I there?
Yes.
We lost your video, though. Go ahead and click it back on.
There we go.
For a second. There we go. Thank you.
I first want to say I'm honored to be here. I appreciate everybody else's willingness to hear the story and make some life changes, hopefully, from our experiences. About this time last year, we were about 3 weeks into the process of my 7-year-old son, Hayden, in treatment. I'll start at the beginning. We were roughhousing one night, and I had him wrapped up, and he had mentioned to me that he had felt some pain inside of his mouth. So I took a look inside of his mouth and noticed that there was a small lump on the inside of his cheek. Mentioned to my wife that that was something that week that we definitely needed to get him into the hospital for, or to the doctor, have it checked out. To make the story a little bit shorter, within 2 weeks, we had had a section of that removed and sent off to UCSF. And a week later, received a phone call that it had come back as small blue cell cancer. It was actually cancerous. And I believe I got that phone call around Friday at work and clocked out immediately by 4 o'clock that day. We were already up at Stanford. We were enrolled. We had had a couple different scans and had a plan for him. The next 11 months, he was going to be receiving chemotherapy every Wednesday. And for the first 30 days, he was going to have a significant amount of radiation every day. We didn't know what to expect at that point. We were in complete shock. We had always been really careful with our children's diet, what they were putting into their bodies, in the hopes that we could possibly ward off or help ward off any type of cancer growing in their bodies, including having a pretty low sugar diet compared to most kids. So, it was just off and running before we knew it. Our heads were spinning. Life had gotten crazy. And we were picking him up at a half day of school every day and taking him up for radiation treatments. And that happened for 30 days. And in conjunction with that, he was taking chemotherapy every Wednesday. His health declined as far as reactions to the treatment. We came home with just a total slew of pharmaceuticals that were meant to treat anything from nausea that he was experiencing to the skeletal pain that he was experiencing. He was having problems with neuropathy in his legs early on already from the types of chemotherapy that he was having administered to him. So we needed to find something that was going to work for him. Within the first, I would say, 30 to 45 days, he had lost nearly 10% of his body weight because of his lack of appetite. And, you know, I'm a good cook, and I usually do cook for the family here. I couldn't make anything or get him to eat anything as much as sipping on maybe a glass of water. He was laid out on the couch. He had no energy. Didn't want to eat much of anything. Didn't care much about anything. And that was the worst, probably the worst that I had ever seen him. He's usually a very upbeat, very happy, sparkle in his eye, loved by everybody type of kid. And to see him in that state, it was really tough. The last visit that we had made up to Stanford Medical Center, Lucille Packard, they had told us that he had reached a point in his weight loss that if he didn't start eating and start gaining weight, that they were going to be putting a feeding tube into him and that we were going to be feeding him intravenously. And that's definitely something that we wanted to try to have not happen for him. So that night I came home, was pretty distraught about the whole thing, just thinking about the whole situation and how that was going to affect him, his ability to continue to go to school and, you know, react with people in public and with his peers without being really ridiculed or stared at because, you know, having a tube hanging out of his nose constantly. That was going to be something that was going to be a part of his life probably for that next year of treatment. So we came home that night, and I had the thought that he possibly might react to cannabis. You know, it had been over a month since I was able to actually make him a meal that he would sit down and eat. More than one bite, sometimes even spit the one bite out and push it aside and just say, you know, I really don't want to do it. And so we came home that night, and I ended up pulling a vegetable glycerin tincture that I had in on the shelf here for my own use. I've got some lower back issues that I've dealt with for about 10 years. And I administered a small amount into his mouth just in the hopes. It was kind of a last ditch effort. I never thought that I would be administering anything like that to my son. You know, I had experience myself with it for my own use, like I mentioned, but I never thought in a million years that it's something that I would be giving to my 7-year-old son. So that was the most profound evening I think that I can remember and probably will ever remember in my family's history, when he turned around and asked me to make him something to eat that night and proceeded to get up off the couch and laugh and run around the house and play with his brother again. And if I remember correctly, I made him 2 meals worth of food that night, because it stimulated his appetite so well and relieved so much pain and so many of the other side effects, the nausea and everything for him. It was just miraculous. So I immediately got up off the seat and, you know, cried with my wife first for a little while, because we had had so many things sent home with us from the school or from the hospital as far as pharmaceuticals to help treat him for all these side effects that he had, and even some drugs to help with side effects of some of the other drugs, and nothing was working for him. Absolutely nothing. So to figure out that that was the not fix all for him, but that was just going to be a huge part in the overall game of the next year of treatment for him. So I contacted Val through WAM. I knew that they were very respected. They have been since the beginning, and she's a huge advocate. So I set up a consultation with her, explained to her our situation, and got a doctor's recommendation from his pediatrician, and our lives turned around from the day that we came home with the Milagro oils from WAM. And we had him on a regimen of CBD and THC. He was administered that once an evening, just maybe an hour before dinner time or so. Valerie had mentioned, it takes about an hour for it to take effect. And it was a huge game changer for us. He immediately started eating normal breakfast, lunch, and dinner. He was no longer laid out on the couch. He was no longer complaining of the pains in his legs. It's been miraculous. And he made it through his whole treatment about 2 months before his chemotherapy regimen was up. He had actually surpassed, he had gained all the weight back that he had lost in that first month to month and a half, and actually surpassed the weight while he was still undergoing chemotherapy treatment. So he was actually gaining weight above and beyond and growing and feeling great and continued to go to school. I can't say enough about the positive effects of what we had received. And the team down at WAM, the schedule that they set up was exactly what he needed. It was perfect. It was never too much. It was never not enough. It was the sign of the professionals and how well they are at what they do, and how much the 23 years that she's been working with all this stuff, doing research and treating patients. And it's, we're really fortunate. I've made a great friend with Val. I've continued my efforts as an advocate to help others. I wished at the point that Hayden was first diagnosed, there was somebody that came into our lives or that I knew that could help push me in that direction. So that first month and a half maybe could have been avoided, the weight loss and everything else. So I've taken it kind of upon myself to be that person. And for the local people here, it almost seems like every month that there's another kid, another high schooler, another young pediatric kid here locally that has even been diagnosed with leukemia and other types of cancers that can benefit from this. And so I've taken it upon myself to start a site, alternativeRxAdvocates.weebly.com. It's got our story on it in case you missed anything. It also has a link to WAM on there for a consultation if you know anybody who has been diagnosed and needs some positive, useful information about this process. If you could send them that way, they can at least read our story. They can make an educated decision. There's another link to a video about GCMAF there. That's another very important thing that we were giving him. It was a probiotic yogurt that had GCMAF. I mean, that's basically our story. We've continued to give it to him even though he's finished his treatment. And we'll continue to give him that probably over the next year to taper him off of that.
Thank you so much for this. Can you drop a link to your website in chat?
And, yes, I can.
And then, and I just want to acknowledge, I so appreciate you sharing your story. I'm so grateful that Hayden has you and had this experience, and also grateful that you're taking the initiative to be that person for others. And I can't say enough about that. I think the time has come that for those of us who have this understanding, it's really important to stand to the truth that we know. And toward that, I want to mention Connection Magazine. Rob, I think you have a link that you could put into chat for people on that. Connection Magazine, this November issue, is all about cannabis and medicinal cannabis. And that's another resource. They're just bold, fabulous publication. It's online and physical, and they really take on the important issues and go into it in a way that's just extremely valuable and informative. So support them. They're real pioneers, and check that out. And then I also wanted to ask before I forget, Robert, can you put in the links into chat from the different petitions so that people have a way to look at the Sean Parker one, as well as the other one? I think it's important to be able to see that stuff. So I know there's a few different directions to go here. I think that the, like, one of the things for me is I'm one of those folks who when I saw Dr. Courtney's documentary Leaf, and I think we should put a link to that in chat also. I was so excited because I don't want to be stoned all the time. Like Val, you mentioned, some people don't want to be stoned all the time, but want the positive aspects of the cannabis, and that I'm one of those. And so understanding that there are options for how to get access to this and get the benefits from it, and customize it for what our different needs and orientations are. I think that's really important. And the list, as we saw from the poll, like what is actually addressed from this plant is huge. I know one person, I want to keep it,
Hey, Kimberly, before you keep going, can I just remind you to click on the camera and icon next to your name so we can bring your video back?
Yes, I'm sorry.
No problem.
I forgot to do that. Yes, thank you. Yes, here I am. So, thank you so much for that story and for the inspiration of this. I want to be sure myself to understand really the most effective things for us all to do, because I think what you're talking about, Nate, is a really common thing. I certainly have the experience in my life of having awakened later than I wish on some things, you know, where the thing that was confronting me, I didn't yet know about all the resources, and it's up to those of us to make it known. And so toward that end, I really want to talk about what some of the most effective things are for us to do, because especially with the TPP, I really want to understand that better. And I want to understand some of the full range of things that can be healed. And it seems like it's really a synergy of things, whether it's like the GICMAF, the GCMAF that Nate just mentioned, is a really important adjunct. I don't know if you, Dr. Courtney know about that, but I would love to know if you do, because we have personal experience with people who are taking a combination of cannabis and the GCMAF, and especially the strong dose of the GCMAF, and it's been effective in keeping the growth of their cancer at bay, halting that. Others who've been healed, and also there's been a problem with the doctors who are prescribing the GCMAF. A startling number have died in this last year. So that's something Foster knows a little bit about. But Dr. Courtney, do you know much about the GCMAF or the synergy of cannabis with other medicines?
Is my microphone on?
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. I'm not familiar with that particular. I know there's huge synergies between cannabis and all of the medicines. GW has approximately 500 patents pending that isolate all different types of interactions with chemotherapy agents and combined uses with other anti-inflammatory and autoimmune disorders. My kind of somewhat remedial approach has been really looking at cannabis as food, in terms of this is what hundreds of millions of animals do, is they eat the leaf. They tend to stay away from the bud. They tend to eat small amounts. Recent research out of Israel on the Psyche vaporizer talks about 100 micrograms of THC changing enzymes that last for 7 weeks, not 7 days, 7 hours, but 7 weeks, because the enzymes have to be degraded before the cellular protection is lost. So I would like to just really know exactly how much benefit that would come from the integration of this plant as a leafy green vegetable in one's diet regularly. And I think we really don't have a handle on how incredibly beneficial it is. I know that some people have more appreciation for that. And I know that it does complement any other effective means. I've, in my personal experience with hundreds of patients with cancer and thousands of people that use it, my practice primarily at this point is just raw cannabis. But that really turns on the fact that all of my patients can grow the plant, so they have access, and that is a huge issue, is access. But because I do... the country where they all, it grows like vegetables in the backyard, so they have access. It's been amazing the number of conditions that people find it responsive to. And so I continue primarily to push first on understanding the terpenal cannabinoids, the dietary essentials, and then look at ways that can be enhanced through manipulation or isolation or in combination. They're just huge areas for research, and that's part of what the Institute would be doing, is first logging what we can learn about the plant as food, and then it as a complement with other ongoing methodologies.
Dr. Courtney, what's it been like for you personally and especially professionally to be coming out in favor of something that's still unfortunately controversial?
I sometimes have items placed in my computer bag on flights, and I get roughed up with customs, and they greet me as soon as my Ritha chip pops up on their screen. Four or five, six people come out of the back, and first thing out of their mouth is, "Do you have any seeds to plant?" You know, it's difficult. You know, testified at the European Union Parliament on dietary non-psychoactive cannabis, and there was someone in the audience that said, "Well, you think this is a panacea?" And you could tell by the tone that it wasn't a physician or researcher. I mean, it was just really pretty caustic. And I said, "You know, I'm not sure it's a panacea, but it certainly is a close approximation of something that's essential in our diet. And in its absence, I believe so much disease is a deficiency state of this, because if you see it as supporting cell health, disease arises at the cellular level. If you support cell health, you take care of the issue at the single cellular level. And so that is its biggest threat, which would be how you could get Obama to come out against raw cannabis is some of his sponsors are saying, you know, we got to rein this prevention thing in hard before it takes off, because you prevent disease, that's going to really devastate an absolutely huge industry.
I think that's the connection that, you know, most people familiar with Thrive know that that's the perspective and the lens that we're looking through, is to understand, you know, when you follow the money, you unpack some of the motives to do things that otherwise, I mean, when I was in journalism school, that's what they say, you know, if the story doesn't make sense, then you follow the money, because that's the thing that would do make somebody do something that otherwise you can't figure it out. And so those of us who think in terms of healing and a thriving planet, you know, can't imagine why would this be stopped. But like I mentioned at the beginning of the call, we're on a, you know, we vet various innovations in the world of healing and new energy, because we're going to facilitate help getting them out there, including your work and everybody here. We're just so grateful for what you're doing. And I think the toothpaste is out of the tube in terms of the shift where people understand that our bodies are our own best medicine, you know, that we heal ourselves, and that working in concert with nature and with these natural plants available to us and keeping our gut healthy, that's the essence of the GCMAF. I encourage you to check it out. It is a neat medicine to work in conjunction with the cannabis. I know we have Shannon for a brief question, if you wanted to come in and then...
May I add something here?
Oh, yes, please.
I just wanted to mention that the endocannabinoid system is... the purposefulness behind taking a high-dose probiotics is that it upregulates the endocannabinoid system. So this is a response. It increases the number of receptors on the surface of target cells. So that's why to include probiotics in great amount. You know, first of all, moving very gingerly, taking anything new, introducing something new into the system. When you're dealing with a healthy body, you want to work, yes, on the cellular aspects, in my opinion, and then an unhealthy body as well. But then one wants to interface on a cellular level in a sort of magnanimous way, because one's fighting a very deaf and dumb cancer, for instance, cancer cells. They are fools, you know, they want to kill their host. That's no way to continue living. As my friend Laura Huxley put it, I had a talk with my cancer and I suggested, this is very foolish of you not to respond to these medicines, because if you kill me, you also will die. So while we, you know, she's met her death in a very courageous and honorable way, it's very wise to think in terms of creating the most surface area in which to allow our medicines to take hold or take effect, to reach the deepest parts of our bodies. So that's great. That's how upregulation works, and that's why one at least would want to engage. And with any illness, we suggest it always, but especially with cancers and degenerative illness.
Great. I really appreciate that. And we'll put a link. I know in the blog we did on cannabis before, there's a link to the GCMAF. I think it's just gcmaf.eu. But if it is, okay, great. So that, for anybody wanting to follow up on that, it is, you know, risky. I know our friend has had his delivery of it intercepted, and there's various things going on like that, because this, you know, it's all rising. I think the awakening is arising, and I think the suppression is arising. Mm-hmm. And so this whole pharmaceutical thing going right now, you know, I think they really think they can get a line on this. And I think we're in a very, you know, I love, Robert, you're talking about this as just a wonderful time to be alive, because it's so rich with opportunity. And I really see that too. And it requires that we stay awake and that we're not fooled by things that might look better than they are, and that we really use our common sense and take the time to do the research to find out what's really true.
I want to mention before we go on to just in relation to this whole area and specifically the GCMAF, that everything we talked about in the movie in terms of there are a small group of individuals, but very powerful, who do not want people to be healthy, and they don't want them to be prosperous, and they don't want them to be free. And this GICMAF is a very powerful substance that kills an enzyme called NAGylase, which is secreted by the cancer cells to protect the cancer cells from your immune system. So this GICMAF kills those cells and therefore boosts your immune system. And they've been having tremendous success with alleviating and curing lots of different cancers. And there are, last I heard, at least a dozen holistic doctors, mostly in Florida, but now up the East Coast and in some other areas of the country, who have been dying mysteriously. And whether it's made to look like a suicide, or whether, you know, one particular famous doctor with, well, he had his laboratory raided, all of his stuff on GICMAF stolen. And then 2 days later, he was found floating in a river with a bullet in his chest. So it's just a sad reminder of, first of all, how cruel these suppressors are, but also on the brighter side of how desperate they are to keep these effective cures out of the public access. And it's up to the rest of us to spread the word on this. We'll be doing a blog on this very soon to help protect these innovators and get the information out into the world. So it's as tragic as it has been that it's taken so long to get cannabis, you know, kind of above the radar and semi-legal and semi-safe and all of that. That same fight is going on with in other areas in the health arena, as well as energy and water purification and so forth. And just know that we are committed to helping with all of that, and invite you to join us and continue your own efforts in any way that you can.
So I want to have Al's question and also Shannon. Can't do, you know, too much personal diagnosis on this, but if you want to talk about what you've been using cannabis for and how that's going, that would be great. Shannon, to come up briefly.
Yes. About 8 years ago, well, I used to be in excellent health, and about 8 years ago, following a hepatitis B vaccine, I came down with a number of autoimmune problems. And it took me years to, I guess, finally come to some possible solutions. So I currently live in Colorado. I used to live just north of Santa Cruz. But I'm currently taking cannabinoids and a product called Synergy, which is 50 milligrams of CBD and THC. And it seems to be helping some. Over the years, I've been gradually improving, but this past year, since I started doing cannabis kind of off and on, I have seen some improvement. I seem to be more alert now. And I guess I'm kind of wondering. And well, at one point, I did kind of consider growing it and juicing it or eating it or whatever. And at the time, it just seemed kind of overwhelming because you got to buy all this equipment and do all this stuff. But maybe that's something I should look at again.
Really glad to hear that that's helping you.
Yeah, thank you.
It's helping helping with my senses, you know, because I had brain fog and everything, and now it just seems like I'm hearing things better, and I'm just more alert. And then also my body seems to be getting stronger.
Right. Well,
I'm not as fatigued and weak as I used to be.
Great.
Well, I guess Colorado is one of the better states to be accessing this in right now.
Yeah.
Well, that was one of the things I considered when I moved.
Yeah.
Great. Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Yeah. Al, you have a question?
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Cool. This is very important to me. I lost my ex a couple of years ago, and during her treatment, which she did have the conventional treatment, but we were able to get her some cannabis, and it really helped her appetite and everything. It just changed a lot, but eventually it got to her, unfortunately. But My question is, why is there such an increase in all these different kind of cancers, like what was mentioned earlier today, especially among the young people? Why is this happening so much, especially now? And I appreciate everybody here on the panelists, you know, great stuff here. So thanks. Thanks for your answers.
So I have my opinions. I bet you do too. Yeah. Do you want to speak to that, Valerie?
Well, in our community, we see a great deal of breast cancers and testicular cancer, as well as prostate. And it's very interesting, many hormonal related cancers. And, you know, we live in a very toxic world, and we live in my opinion, very disconnected from our bodies. And I think that I would suggest that utilizing cannabis, inducing as one aspect, and when you can't grow cannabis in the amount, when one is not able, I should say, to grow cannabis in the amount that is appropriate for continued juicing. I suggest in Europe and in places like England, where you can access unfettered seeds where they're not sterilized, that you take the seeds, sprout them, and use the sprouts. It's also very cold and difficult to bring sprouts to fruition, but you can use sprouts and use them in a very similar way that we use alfalfa or sunflower sprouts. Now, continued treatment with cannabis oils and CBDs, there's stuff on the market from hemp that I would not necessarily suggest personally. I don't think that it's bad, but I suggest that it doesn't contain the full profiles or the complete profiles that one might require for a more appropriate response and interaction with the body, with our bodies. But utilizing one of the nutraceuticals, the future nutraceuticals will be the daily dose of cannabis oil, or and I suggest again, to echo Dr. Courtney, utilizing it as a whole plant. Why are we so ill? Well, you know, the society that we've created it's endemic in our society, that there's illness because it's what we do in the world. I think we have not looked at the impact of our behavior and the toxins in our environment. This is my personal opinion, and I think, you know, probably could be echoed and built upon it. We could have a wonderful, long, ensuing month-long conversation about the behaviors that we've engaged in as human beings.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you all. I was particularly interested since Nate had he was doing all the right things. Mm-hmm. You know, and 7-year-olds, it's amazing. But thank you all, really.
Yeah. Thank you. Dr. Courtney, did you want to speak to that at all?
As well as the sprouts are extremely useful, there is a cannabinoid spike that occurs between day 10 and 14 when the cotyledons break the surface. And I've had patients that have taken 25 of those little 2-inch plants, blend them up with a little bit of water, making about a 1-ounce shot, and treat very severe gingivitis and gum retraction. And one fellow had 4 to 5 millimeter pockets that reduced to 1 to 2 millimeters.
Wow. And
so, I mean, the humility of chewing the leaf is genius. I mean, when you're willing to use this plant the way it evolved over 34 million years, you end up, when you treat those gingivitis infections, you stop releasing chemokines and cytokines, messenger molecules that then go on to aggravate the arthritides, the neoplasias in the intestine, degenerations in the brain, sclerosis in the heart. So a healthy mouth is a gateway to total body health. And if you're willing to chew on the leaf, the fibrous nature of the plant allows you to drizzle these antibacterial, anti-inflammatory compounds slowly onto the infected gums for as long as you're willing to chew. And like I said, because of the fiber, you can chew away at it for quite some period of time. Mouthwash is an approximation to get there more quickly. In Canada, you can sometimes get 5 pounds of seed for $20, and every once in a while it slips through without being irradiated until the forces at B shut that down. But theoretically, that's part of what the New Earth Institute were looking to do, is to produce high volume, high cannabinoid content seed, because it takes 1/20th the amount if you have a potent seed that you're sprouting or doing with microgreens. And living leaf cannabis is really a better interpretation of limited liability corporation, where you shift all the liability to society and you reap all the harvest benefits and shift the responsibility. But living leaf cannabis really is just such a stunning way. And we were talking earlier about cancers. There was an excellent presentation on the dendritic cell, which is a cell that's involved in determining if a cell is normal or abnormal. A better name for that same cell is an antigen-presenting cell. And if it thinks something is abnormal, it will ingest that cell, process that antigenic material, migrate to the lymph node, and present that processed antigenic material to the lymph node system that then mounts T cell and cell mediated immunity. And then the immune system goes out and will destroy every cell that has that marker on it. And so with the cannabinoid, with raw cannabis, when it's used as an antineoplastic, that's my fantasy as to how it works, is that it enhances the detection, because the cancer only exists because the body allows it to exist. And if you can't shift the body's detection and elimination, you've got an elegant way to treat tumors that you cannot resect surgically, or tumors that you want to manage without chemo and radiation. And I believe it should be the absolute first line. As soon as the tumor is diagnosed, a totally benign, no side effect treatment is the way. And then within 7 days, there probably is a computer shift in lucency, in terms of a computer can say, well, okay, we've gone from 97% opaque to 93, and you'll know, okay, let's give this 7 more days. And by day 14, a radiologist can probably just look at the scan and say, yeah, this is, you know, there's a shift in the density. By day 30, a layperson can say, wow, that white tumor is now gray, and by day 90, it's gone. Given that this is the property of this plant, that we've known since 75, you know, it really should be the first line, because if you can treat a condition without horrific side effects, that really is incumbent. That's, I mean, if you want to decrease the world population, you know, then we can kind of go ahead down some of these other paths. But if really humane management is the issue, and that's what really struck me, was I initially thought it was a lack of information, and let's explore and educate. But you know, that's not an issue of a lack of education. It's more of a lack of disease as a mechanism of, you know, cash flow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Linda, I forgot to say to Goa. Goa, can Linda Gamble come on up? This is so helpful, and I wanted to talk to all of you for a long time. Okay, great, Linda.
Hi, can you see me?
No, we can hear you. That's all we get today.
Okay. So I have chronic menopause symptoms, one of those being insomnia, chronic lack of sleep at the moment, and also I have some neck and shoulder pain that I'm using CPD oils to try and alleviate. I'm based in the UK, and there are a few websites where you can order oil. They seem to be in varying strengths. This is non-THC-based CBD oils. But I'm really unsure of what the quality is and the efficacy of the oils. And is there any way of knowing, or any kind of quality control organizations that are looking into this, so that we can go somewhere and find out of where they're saying whether what we're buying is good enough to be taking for this sort of thing, because you just don't know what's in there. That's my concern.
Thank you very much for asking that. All right. Do any of you know about quality control for this kind of stuff?
How does one comment?
You just go ahead.
Just go ahead.
Okay. There was an excellent BAMF at the ICRS, I think it was 2013. There was an analysis of the various oils, and there is a very wide range. There are many that have residual petroleum products, which probably is not the best approach. The problem is it's not standardized, and as we move towards standardization, you're going to have the corporations and the government stepping in, and then you have another whole issue on your hands. But it really is difficult to assess the type of materials used, the process involved, residual contaminants that could be present. And so it really is a gray area, and it's actually this area that I believe they're going to use to manipulate and shift this in the direction of corporate control. And then you're going to have, we're going to have to put mercury in there to stabilize it, and maybe use a cyanide and, you know, cyanocobalamin, you know, and so they'll be able to use their own additives, which is probably more horrific than the mom and pops that are sometimes using techniques that are less than ideal. So I appreciate that difficulty in discerning it, and there's nothing short of real accurate analysis. And there's a lot of places advocating and requiring that. And that really will be an avenue, is, you know, if we have GC and we have different methods for detecting contaminants and residuals, so that we know what other excipients could be involved.
May I jump in as well? Yes, please. We have, of course, everything tested, and testing is really the right, it's an appropriate way to move. You really want to know that there are controls and appropriate application. What we do here is we utilize many different things. Cannabis is not the only plant that grows in the kingdom. It's one of the great plants that grows in the kingdom. And what we often do is we bring in other aspects. So menopause, it's difficult. You really never leave menopause. It's just more spaces between the hot flashes. So one of the things, insomnia is difficult, and we suggest GABA. And I know that there's a lot of skewed information around uptake of GABA. And, for depression, L-glutamine, looking at other aspects in your world, many different things that you can use to sleep and to become restful, to bring in mindfulness and yoga and the practices that you can begin at 100 years old. It doesn't really matter how old you are, but that you can always engage in your life in a healing practice. And certainly using other aspects, you say you're in the UK, and I would definitely begin sprouting, and I would use sprouts, because I think you're going to get far more than paying from them than you would be from paying these exorbitant prices for oils that are really not standardized and that you cannot fully rely on. It's my opinion. It's what I would do if I lived in the UK.
Thank you.
And along those same lines, can I make a comment?
Yeah, please. When you start talking,
there was some very interesting research that showed about that cannabinoid spike. With the microgreens, you have the leaves punching through the soil. That's where the kind of clock begins. With sprouts, you have to add a little more time on. So you want to push that sprout out to where you get that cannabinoid spike, because there's very little production that first 7 to 10 days. And with a sprout, you see that root and you get all excited that it's living, and you start to clock earlier. So you wanna make sure you push your sprouts out a little further than you would normally, so that you actually capture that little spike that occurs, because then it goes away again and then begins building in the second month, peaks obviously at the end of the third. But if you're in that sprout microgreen range, try to time that. I mean, obviously analysis, once again, is the perfect way to go, but many people can't analyze their sprouts as much as they would like to be able to.
Mm-hmm. I would love if there's like a 1 minute version that you could each describe, Dr. Courtney, Valerie, and Robert, of what you most need to fulfill the vision of what you believe is possible here in the world of empowering people to be awake and capable of healing.
Yeah, how can people in our network concretely help your initiatives?
Well, one thing that I've been wanting to say, first of all, Valerie, it's so good to see you on here, and I'm so proud to be friends with you, because what you sparked is really a shift of the locus of authority here. You know, there are a lot of drug policy maneuver. There's a lot of drug policy maneuvering going around. People, you know, like applying for permission to a government. But what you and Mike helped spark here was a claiming of our own inalienable rights to do this. And I think that you're just so inspiring, and to hear you speak about how you work with patients is you know, I just love to see that spread throughout the country. Now, this leads me to another question I have for Dr. Courtney. I'm really just learning that I've been in a library a lot for the last 40 years, and I'm now spending more time in the garden. I'm also here in Northern California, where we have the perfect climate for this, especially if you're a little more inland where it's drier. Now, it's my understanding that the buds are what produce most of the oils of the plant. And the advantage of living in a dry climate is that the buds do not attract as much mold. But what I'm learning from you in this most intriguing idea of cannabis as food is that you're saying that animals stay away from the buds and eat the leaves. And you've been talking about the value of the leaves. So am I correct that this shows that there's a lot more of the United States that can grow their own gardens and use cannabis, you know, the East Coast where it's more humid, where mold would affect buds. So people can really introduce this plant into their vegetable gardens much more broadly than I previously thought. Is that true?
This is definitely true. The idea of sprouts and microgreens brings it into anyone that's got a window, and you actually don't need a window because it's full on autopower. You mix water and the thing starts to sprout and becomes food. If you do have any type of sun growing it outdoors, an animal is going to eat this plant in March and April, May and June and July and August. And when the flower is there, a few animals will take a bite of it, but by far and away the most stay away from the bud. They will continue to eat the leaf. And these animals tend to eat a very small amount of leaf, which is interesting that the dose associated with that is pretty comparable to the dose provided by the Psyche vaporizer. That Psyche vaporizer can resolve down to 100 micrograms. Psychoactive dose is 10,000. So, you know, the animal that takes a bite of three or four or five leaves, maybe once or twice a day or a couple times a week, it seems so insignificant from our psychoactive scale that we throw leaves away by the bagfuls. But in fact, that when you recognize that shifts chemically the structure of enzymes, and that these enzymes, once altered, remain in effect for up to 7 weeks, you suddenly have a system where what's referred to as the ultra low dose THC is in fact the physiologic dose. The amount of THC in leaf is the right amount. It's not enough to get you high if you consider that the end point. But in fact, the amount of THC that's in leaf is the amount that it takes to protect the brain, heart, and liver from carbon monoxide poisoning, MDMA excitotoxicity, from PTZ seizure induction, from pentobarbital neurologic deficits, from the ischemia, the reduction of blood supply oxygen. I mean, the sRNA's work is sweeping in the scope of cellular protection provided by what he refers to as ultra low dose. I much greatly prefer the term physiologic dose, because that it's not ultra low. That is the amount that animals consume, and it's the amount that the body needs. And so, you know, I really you know, prefer that as a beginning. Let's totally understand that and then begin to make our interventions in an attempt to improve upon what this plant can do as a food source.
So, Dr. Courtney, could you just say one suggestion that you would have for our network that people could have the option of doing that would help with the sort of initiative that you're involved in?
We're just attempting to locate a safe environment where one can grow it as food and not have to, you know, weather the storm of federal intervention, and then a place to set up a facility where people could come to begin to learn about sprouts and microgreens and processing and fresh use and integration. And that would also serve for the treatment of mild to moderate as well as severe and terminal conditions. And in that situation, we'd be able to gather the clinical data of, you know, dose, and we need serum levels because bioavailability shifts widely as a person is taking other medicines. The P450 system comes up, first pass falls off. And so we need to really be able to say that that the dose they're getting is making it into their blood, and so we can make sure that the trial is clinically accurate. So a location and some assistance with building up some resources so that we could have the space for people to come and be safe while they're learning the skills on how to.
And can that be done within the United States in places like Colorado or Washington now, or does it need to be in some other so-called nation state?
My sense is, you know, they said that the indigenous lands were safe, and then I heard that they were raiding cannabis grown on indigenous lands. So my fear is, you know, if you're a $2.8 trillion industry, you know, you have the ability to pull strings and do things to protect prevention from becoming a
problem. So if you have ideas along that line, go to Dr. Courtney's website in chat and send him a suggestion on that.
Yeah, and also you can come to through info@thrivemovement.com and we'll make the connections. I have a vision that I would like to share. I would first like to hear a 1-minute answer from Valerie and Robert also, if there are specific things that our network around the world can know about to facilitate the initiatives that you're involved in, because we're thrilled to know of you and your work.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. For WAM, we are a collective of patients, and it really grew out of need and a lack of access. And 23 years ago, there was very little. Since 1996, what we've seen is increasing cost of cannabis. So there are plethora of cannabis dispensaries, not really collectives, but dispensaries, and with outrageous prices, outrageous in as much as it's fine if you have an exposable income. But if you are an ill person, a patient in America, that really means that your finances will very likely become greatly compromised, as not only your health. What I'd like to see is more sharing. The idea that there could be small upstart organizations like cannabis dealing in response to their community, and the definition to define the services according to the community, the structure of the community, it's an extremely important thing to do. It's a response. And secondly, we are looking for to be able to buy the land that we're now working on, and it's difficult. There's things moving very quickly. It's a beautiful place and a very healing and exquisite sacred place, as the earth is a sacred place. Right. And so without doubt, we don't make it more sacred, but we recognize what it holds. It's helped to heal tens of thousands of people. And I know that it will be fine without me. However, we would like to be able to stay on the land and continue our work. People come, we have a collective garden, and our organization is completely donation-based. So it does mean that while our capability of serving people is great, and the response the response of no evidence of disease is phenomenal. There's only 2 minutes. I'm going to give those to
okay,
Robert.
Thank you. And I have a vision that I want to share too, so people stay on. Thank you. Robert, do you have a 1-minute answer to that of what would be most helpful?
I spent last night with a few hours last night with one of the activists in the California, what's it called? The California Cannabis Hemp Initiative.
Yeah.
And they need money. You're talking about needing $900,000 to get these enough signatures. But I'm never been that excited about raising money, but to expand the popular awareness of this initiative, especially in contrast with the Sean Parker one. As I said at the beginning, I think that everybody that's a cannabis lover is going to resonate more deeply with this. I put the website out on the chat, and that if everybody that was listening would just send it to 3 or 4 friends and asking them to do the same thing, this could spread exponentially throughout the state of California, and we could surprise everyone by getting a popular referendum without even raising that much money, just really truly have a grassroots grass movement.
Right.
The spirit of these people is terrible. And so that would be my vote right now.
Well, thank you. I love a grassroots grass movement. I'm going to, Foster has something to say after this, but I would like for a moment for us to have a vision of what's possible. I'm just as a big believer, as you know, any of you who saw Thrive, the whole last third was a vision of what's possible. We're big on solutions, and I think picturing that solution is a very important part of it. So you can close your eyes or not, but just tune in for a moment as I share my vision of this. Imagine this. You wake up into a world where spirituality, technology, and medicine all reflect our awareness of our intrinsic connection to the vast life-affirming energy that surrounds us. You feel the power of your place amidst it all, clear that you are here for something no one else is here to do, a purpose so personal to you and so exciting that you are alive with passion, clarity, and unwavering commitment. People everywhere experience themselves as so clear and powerful that the notion of surrendering to anyone else's control and domination is a bygone memory. And instead, we claim our right to live as fully as we can imagine. Plants that nature gave us to heal are cultivated everywhere freely. We have created a synergy of cures, all of which support our own intrinsic life force and impulse to thrive, both to prevent illness and to cure it when it arises. Instead of wars against cancer, we learn from the immortal cells that are cancer's trademark and create immortal immunity. We look for serendipity. We listen to our intuition. We remember what it was like to obsolete the old paradigm. We simply refused to participate in it. We joined together in buddy systems and educated ourselves and supported each other to be true to ourselves. We aligned our behavior with our highest values. We refused their prohibitions. We provided each other with healthy food, effective medicine. We refused to abide by laws that denied our individual sovereignty and our right to health. We recognized the unjust claims of authority over our lives. Old suppressive laws became irrelevant because we rendered them unenforceable. Now, everything about our lives on this bountiful planet reveals our understanding that we are energy, that each cell operates at a particular frequency, and our medicine engages at that same frequency for optimum health and healing. We celebrate the invisible worlds of which we are a part and on which we depend, be that the invisible oxygen that we breathe, the invisible pull of the moon, the invisible forces that inspire our creative impulse, our intuition, so that we settle into calm and reliable access to the ever-present guidance and support that hums in our midst, ready and willing to assist us in realizing our full potential as individuals and as a species. We experience our oneness as we walk barefoot on our clean, healthy planet, aligning our beat with the beat of the earth, humming along in sync with the Schumann pulse. We build technologies in tune with the greater cosmic frequencies. We create cures that resonate with these vibrations. We recognize that we are vessels of the highest order, and we live together in celebration of that healthy, whole, connected, and free. Thank you for sharing that vision with me.
That's beautiful, Kimberly. Thank you. And let me just add to that just the 30,000 foot view of this issue that we've been talking about today and its similarity to virtually every issue of the hundreds that we deal with in the Thrive movement, that in a free world, every single one of these issues goes away, whether it's GMOs or chemtrails or banking or police state and on and on and on. When people are free to create, when they're free to ingest the plants of their choice, when they're free to access the healthcare of their choice, and when those who violate others are personally liable and prosecuted and need to make restitution, then all of these issues go away. So that is the fundamental issue that will liberate all of them, in which Kimberly so beautifully expressed in that vision. So just a reminder that though there are so many issues, they really all come back to, by what authority does anyone claim to rule us? And how can we expose and obsolete that as quickly as possible and set ourselves free? One more thing I want to share with you before we go is that our next event will be on December 12th from noon to 2 Pacific time. And we're having my longtime friend and colleague Nassim Haramein on for an intimate and what I know will be an adventurous exploration. Nassim and I have known each other for almost 20 years and worked together very intimately for about 5 or 6 years. And the format is going to be that we're going to be together looking back at stories, hilarious stories, instructive stories on our various challenges in changing the paradigms of philosophy, physics, politics, and health and more. And we're going to be each doing updates on the status of our current research and developments in the Thrive Connect movement and in the Resonance Academy and Nassim's work with Unified Field Theory. And then we're going to spend the last part of our conversation looking forward. We're going to each just project what we think is going to be happening. And what are the obstacles and what are the opportunities over the next 50 years in areas such as energy and anti-gravity and ET contact and spirituality, cosmology, health, and so forth. And we really then want to open that up for your insights, for your questions, for your visions of the future. So please set aside that Saturday, December 12th, and join us if you can. If you can't, be sure and catch it on the archive and let your friends know about this think tank opportunity of Thrive Together.
Thank you so much to all of you who joined, and Robert and Valerie and William and our team and Nate. Just dearly appreciate you, and we'll do everything that we can to support your good work on behalf of everyone.
What a delight.
Thank you.
Thank you for helping us all thrive.
Thank you. Joe, you want to open it up? People can say goodbye.
Bye.
Okay, bye-bye. Thank you.
Everybody, thanks.
Great. Bye. You guys appreciate everything.
Thank you.
Thanks a whole lot. Appreciate all your information. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye. Bye. Thank you.
Have a good day.
Well done.
Lots of blessings. Bye. Bye-bye.
Yeah.
Thank you. Okay.
Thank you.
Indians. Control of
the system.
Go, you can go. Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Thank you so much.
Love and hugs.
You know, the problem is, feds believe they have over.